Welcome to Ag Matters, covering the positive agriculture stories from across Alaska with your host, Amy Pettit of the Alaska Farmland Trust.
Well, good morning and welcome to another edition of Ag Matters Radio. This is your host, Amy Pettit, and we are live Wednesday morning. And I think that my caller is online. Michelle, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, good morning and welcome.
Thank you.
So, Michelle Church is a longtime board member of Alaska Farmland Trust. And Michelle, thanks for getting up early and joining me this morning. I always like to start the show by asking my guests to tell us a little bit about themselves and their connection with Alaska and particularly with Alaska agriculture. So tell us a little bit about that, Michelle.
Okay, well, my husband and I own Moonstone Farm, which is a small organically run operation on a colony farm. It was my husband's grandparents were colonists, John and Julia Church, came up from Wisconsin. So we bought this place in 1995 and have been slowly putting it back into production over the years. I joined the Farmland Trust board because I understand that without farms, we don't have farmland, and without farmland, we don't have food. So it's a pretty simple connection for me, and that's why I'm part of the board.
Yeah, but Michelle, let's go a little deeper than that. Did you grow up on a farm, or did you grow up here in Alaska?
I did not grow up on a farm, and I really had no idea about farming when we purchased his grandmother's farm. My husband was a machinist for the Alaska Railroad for 38 years, and he just always wanted to have more land and more opportunities to do things. And so when his grandmother put the farm on the market, he decided to buy it, sort of much to my dismay, actually, because I was like, I don't know anything about farming. I had just finished a degree in natural science, and my plan was to do ecosystem management, and I thought, well, okay, here we go. We have an ecosystem right here, and so we decided we would do this, and use organic methods because it's a small farm. It's 30 acres. And so because the Matanuska soils are so rich, really my ignorance on the whole thing wasn't much of a hindrance.
The soil's been good to you.
Yes, it has been very good to me.
So. Okay, so let's talk more about Moonstone Farms first then, and then we'll get into some farmland trust details. But tell us a little bit more about that operation that you've had going for a couple of decades now.
Okay, well, what we do is we do produce, and we are not certified organic, but we use organic methods. We build our own compost using manure from farms that we work with, and also all of our vegetables and hay that we don't use and things like that. So we have we have two garden plots that are about 3/4 acre. You can grow a lot of produce on a relatively small amount of ground. We have 12 acres of hay that we hay here on our property, and then my husband also hays property on about 10 other small farms throughout the valley, usually for people that no longer want to or are able to farm, but they don't want to see their fields grow up into trees again, and they're too small for the bigger equipment, so that we do square bale haying, and we raise chickens and we raise turkeys, and I also have a small, I don't call it a peony farm, I call it my peony plot. so I have about 320 or so peony plants that are now in going into their fifth season, so they're in full production. It's quite interesting.
Yeah. So a couple of questions. This is something that I hear often, I would say. Folks say, I use organic methods and practices, but I'm not certified organic. So tell us why you're not certified organic. Why didn't you take that extra step?
Well, I haven't taken the extra step because it's very expensive to do it. There is no certification inspector, I guess you would call them, in Alaska, so you have to fly them up. I sort of operate on, we do mostly CSAs, which are community-supported agriculture, so people buy directly from us, and so they know us, they know what our methods are, and so it just hasn't been a step that I've needed to take.
Okay.
So we have chosen not to do that.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. And you mentioned quite a bit of hay production, but I didn't hear you mention any livestock other than the birds. So all of the hay that you're producing is being sold to other folks?
Right. Yes. Okay. My husband was always, no, we're not getting a horse. We're going to sell hay to people who have horses.
There you go. And then, so it's late October already. I'm not sure how that happened, but yeah. So your produce season is hopefully over, right? Is everything tucked in and put away for the winter?
Well, nothing's ever tucked away and put away for the winter. It's always a goal. It never happens. So we still have a few root crops in the ground, mostly that are in our hoop house, so okay. It's still okay. I have probably another week or so that I can still dig them safely out of the ground. What's left is mostly for our consumption.
Okay.
I still have, probably about 30 or 40 heads of cabbage that I'm selling, either through markets or through individuals that know I have it and are wanting, again, chemical-free food that they can make sauerkrauts and things like that. But
okay. Other
than that, we're pretty much done. So,
let's tell folks how they can find you if they are interested in those 30 heads of cabbage for sauerkraut making. How do we get in touch with Moonstone Farms?
They can call or text me on my cell phone is the best way, which is 907-354-1887. Or they can go to our Facebook page, Moonstone Farm, and get a hold of me that way.
Okay. And you mentioned birds. I was one of the lucky people that got to consume a Moonstone Farms turkey for Thanksgiving last year. It was amazing. Are you still taking buyers for birds for this fall?
No, we have them. They're all sold.
Shoot. I sure hope my Thanksgiving plans to go to Oregon come through.
Right.
Okay, so all the birds are sold out. So just some cabbage left and you're done for the year.
Yep, that's pretty much it. I also, I do pickled peas and pickled beets. The peas are pretty much sold. I still have, maybe a case of pickled beets, and it's not a sweet pickle like you get in salad bars. I think people don't like beets because that's their introduction to beets.
Right.
The beets at salad bars, which is just really an unfair introduction to a beet. So this is a hot pickling process, and so they're quite different, and they're crunchy, and they're very good.
Is the do you use the same brine for the beets that you use for the peas?
Yes.
Okay, then I would like you to consider at least half of that case of beets sold, because I don't want to put this out on the airwaves. I mean, I know we've got so many people listening, but Michelle Church's pickled peas and beets are like the best thing that you've ever had. I paid good money at Oktoberfest to get my hands on a jar of your pickled peas because they're so good.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. You need to, I think you need to increase your pea production over time.
I know. I do. That's true.
You could probably make a small fortune off of your pickled peas, Michelle. No joke. So good. All right. Well, and then hay production, I guess you guys would still have hay for sale throughout the winter. Is that correct?
No, actually, we've sold out all the hay that we had. This was a terrible year for hay because of it was so rainy.
Right.
You need a certain amount of sunny days and or sunny, windy days in order to get the hay dry. And we just did not have that this summer. So that is a problem for, I think, for a lot of folks that have animals for this winter, because the hay production was, it was just really difficult in this part of the world. I think Delta had better luck, and so, you know, there's definitely product around in Alaska that they won't have to bring up from the lower 48, but this was just one of those years that we just chased hay around and just could not get the quantities in that we needed to, because we would only get like 2 days between rainstorms, and all it needs is a little sprinkle to ruin the hay, and then you have to try and get it to dry again, and it loses its nutritive value each time it gets rained on after it has dried.
Right. I've heard that from a number of producers. You know, I was doing our monitoring visits last week, and a number of our protected properties are used for hay production, and I unfortunately heard that over and over again. And unfair question, because I know David is the primary haymaker, but could you put a number on it? Like, what percentage is your production down this year compared to years past?
Oh, I think probably I would say 60%. I mean, well over half of what we normally get in.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I hope the livestock producers of the area are paying attention and getting their hands on the hay that they need for the winter. I remember a few years ago when I still worked at the Division of Agriculture, and we had a bad hay year. And then that winter there were people, you know, without hay to feed their animals, and things got desperate there for a little bit.
Yeah, we've had calls all summer, people, you know, looking for hay, and I would tell them, look out your window. It's raining, so we can't get your hay in, especially for people with horses, because goats, cows especially, can pretty much eat anything. But with horses, the hay, once it gets wet, if it's not dried properly, it gets moldy, and then the horses have respiratory issues from the mold. And so
things get bad quickly.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if you're just tuning in, I want to remind folks that you're listening to Ag Matters Radio. I'm your host, Amy Pettit, and joining me this morning is a longtime Alaska Farmland Trust board member, Michelle Church. We've been chatting about her farm, Moonstone Farms. And Michelle, I think now we should transition into a little bit more farmland trust discussion. So another unfair question for you. What year did you become involved with Farmland Trust?
Oh, I should have really looked that up, I guess. It has been a while. Let's see. I was on the first board that sort of transitioned from the ARRC board, which they started the Farmland Trust because they realized that we needed to have a mechanism to be able to protect farmland outside of sort of the political realm, which can ebb and flow, and you can lose easements that way if they are just protected with government easements. And so let's see, what year was that? I can't even remember. It's probably been 5 or 6 years, I think.
You think that's all? I think it's been longer than that.
Maybe it has been longer than that.
Yeah, ARRC created Farmland Trust in 2005.
Oh, my goodness.
There you go. Yeah, and so then the Farmland Trust Board was created, separate from ARRC's board a couple of years later. But I think you've been around longer than 5 or 6 years, Michelle.
It might have been 2009.
Yeah, I think that sounds more like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wow. Well, the years go by way too fast. So there you go.
They do. They do. Well, you've been an integral part of the board, especially since I've been there the last couple of years. You're kind of a key voice on the board, reminding folks why we're there and what we're doing. You mentioned it a little bit in your introduction, but tell us again why this was an organization that you chose to give your volunteer time to.
Well, I saw so many farms, particularly in the Springer system around the fairgrounds, because it's such a visible area of development, just turning into subdivisions. And also around our farm, we are pretty much surrounded now by subdivisions. So it was pretty obvious that protection of farmland is just something that we needed to do. As the we've seen changes in the climate over the last 20 years since we started farming here, as far as the amount of snow that we get and the number of days that we are actually able to farm increasing.
Yeah.
And so I think that Alaska is positioned to become a very important food production state for the country, actually, especially as, more terrible things happen in the food belt down in the lower 48 with droughts, floods, whatever. Alaska really is positioned to sort of increase agriculture as an industry. And again, unless you have farmland, you can't farm on just anything. We are sort of at the tail end of the really good soils for agriculture production. I mean, there's great farms everywhere, but we just dug a well and a ditch out here, so I got to see the soil profile, which was really interesting.
Yeah.
And it's, around the Springer system, the topsoil, there are places where it's, 12 to 20 feet deep, and where we are, we're kind of on the bench across from the hospital, just give people an idea of where we're at, off of the Parks Highway. And the soil here is at probably, maybe 2 feet deep. So it just sort of starts to thin out as you get sort of away from that Springer system.
Right.
And it gets more gravelly as you get towards Big Lake and up north.
Right,
so,
north, yeah.
So, having that amazing soil structure and the fertility of the soil, which again lets somebody like me, who really had no knowledge of farming, be able to be successful at it because the soil is so good.
Right. I think that's a common misconception, or it's certainly a question that I answer a lot in my role with Farmland Trust is, people will say, Alaska is so big and there's so much space, and why on earth would you want to lock up property, in perpetuity? And, there's so much room to grow food. But I think the thing that people don't realize is that not every acre of land in Alaska is appropriate for food production, nor
right.
is it within reach. There's so much of Alaska that's off the road system, that's remote, et cetera, that's not close to a market where you could actually sell food. So,
right.
And that soil piece of it is such a big piece of it. We often talk about classes of soil, class 1 through 5, and another thing that many Alaskans are not aware of is that class 1 is the ideal soil for food production and agricultural production. And we have no class 1 soils in this state. We start at class 2, and there's very, very little of that. And like you mentioned, the majority of it is actually right there on the Springer system in Palmer. And then there's a few patches of it throughout the state, but again, not very much. And We're already, as you know, importing 95% of our food into the state. If we want to increase the amount of food that we produce for ourselves, and as you mentioned, the future maybe for other folks, if we don't start protecting the soil, then I'm not sure where folks think that food is going to come from.
Right, exactly. And you know, hydroponics, I mean, there's a lot of pieces, a lot of different ways of growing food, but, you know, growing it from the soil is just, I don't know, it's just, it seems a healthier, more natural thing to do. You can, like I said, feed a lot of people on a small piece of ground. There are a lot of smaller farms like ours who are able to sort of step in and help with major food production. We don't have a lot of farms that are thousands of acres like you see in the Midwest.
Sure.
But the farms that we have certainly could up our production again because the season is extended at least 2 weeks on either end in our experience.
Wow.
In the 20 years that we've done this. Yeah, if you don't have the ground to grow it in, and you know, subdivisions, I mean, once you like I heard at the Land Trust Alliance when I first got on the board, they said the last thing that you plant is a house, which is so true, because once you disturb that soil structure, you can put the topsoil back and you can certainly grow grasses and things like that on it, but you really have lost a lot of the productivity of that soil. It takes a long time for a really good soil profile and for those class two soils to form. So it just makes sense to have that farmland in protection. It's an economic boon, not only to have the production of food, which is a marketable item, but it's also you have less services that are required on a farm for the taxpayers to have to pay for.
Right.
So it's a win for everyone to have farmland in protection, and it's a volunteer program. It's not like we're going up to farms and saying we're taking your farm.
Right.
It's for, you know, it's sort of like a lot of the people that we do haying for, people who have farmed their land for their whole life or for a couple of generations, and they just don't want to see it developed, but they don't have a mechanism to be able to protect themselves from you know, the increasing in property taxes and that sort of thing. So putting their land in a conservation easement gives them sort of a sense of a legacy. They're protecting farmland for future generations, people that will not know them or know anything about them, but that farm, that ground is going to be there,
right,
to produce food. So it is important to a lot of people, and we just need, you know, to have the finances to be able to, you know, pay for those development rights, which
right,
is, so, you know, not a cheap thing.
Right. Well, one more time, Michelle, I'm going to interrupt you to remind folks that if you're listening to Ag Matters Radio live on Wednesday morning, I'm your host, Amy Pettit, and Michelle Church is my guest this morning. We've been talking about her farm, Moonstone Farms, and also Michelle is a, sounds like maybe for almost a decade, Michelle has been a board member of Alaska Farmland Trust, and we certainly appreciate your time with us. You know, you started to segue into one of the most difficult parts of our job at Alaska Farmland Trust, and that is the finances. And we're in a particularly, I think it's a good opportunity or a good time right now. At Farmland Trust, we are about to close on a property that we have protected in partnership with the Great Land Trust. So that will put about 80 more acres into permanent protection. We just found out that for 2018, we did get approval from the United States Department of Agriculture to protect another property that will be another 70 acres right here in the greater Palmer area. But we also have the, we have the great challenge that we have three additional applications in our system at Farmland Trust. And so with those projects, the one that we'll close on, the one that for 2018 and the three additional applications, we're looking at a bill of over $800,000.
Right.
And so Michelle as a board member and myself as the executive director of Farmland Trust, we have a lot of money to raise in a short amount of time. And that's a big challenge, right?
Yes. Yeah, it is definitely a big challenge. And it is something that we definitely have a lot of supporters for what we're doing.
We do.
But I think that I personally think it's incumbent upon the state of Alaska to invest in this industry because it is an industry that is sustainable and
a renewable resource.
Right, exactly. And in this time of, you know, looking for, you know, more sustainable revenue streams for the state of Alaska, I think agriculture is certainly something that is not being given the due that it needs to. And it would be a relatively small investment on the state's part to be able to help with providing funds to put farmland into production. So I certainly encourage our legislators to take a serious look at that.
Yeah.
And
the state of Alaska has been good to us over the years and has been generous with their funds, and we have used their funds wisely and protected.
Exactly.
We're up to 300 acres protected now. And, you know, that's a really strong point that one of the biggest benefits to the state investing in Farmland Trust is that their dollars are matched twice by the federal government. And so not all, you know, state appropriation money that's put into projects has that benefit of those matching dollars. And not only are they matched once, but they're matched twice by the federal government. So that's a good talking point if you're out there mentioning to legislators how they should spend money, although it's not necessarily a friendly topic right now to tell legislators how to spend money right now.
Right. But yeah. A lot of people, as you're meeting with your legislator, you're having lunch.
Sure.
And you have to remember that that food came from somewhere.
Right, yeah.
So it's definitely something that people tend to take for granted, but certainly hammer that home that this really is an opportunity for Alaska to grow an industry that is sustainable and that would increase food security for Alaska and potentially develop an export market of Alaskan food because,
yeah.
You know, like with my peas, one of the reasons they're so good is because Alaska soils are cool and so the sugar content our produce is higher than it is in other places in the Midwest. So our carrots are sweeter, our cabbage are sweet. Everything is just
the beets
sweeter.
Don't taste like beets.
Right, exactly. Everything is better. It really is.
Yeah.
And it's not just a local pride thing.
Well, Michelle, surprisingly, our half an hour is just about already up. So I want to thank you again for being my guest on Ag Matters this morning. It's been a pleasure learning about Moonstone Farms. I want to remind folks to check that out. Get your hands on some of those spicy beets and peas if you can, if I don't beat you to it.
Yeah.
And there's lots of opportunities to support Alaska Farmland Trust through the next couple of months through end of year giving and Christmas shopping on our website, et cetera. So,
exactly.
Thanks again for your time, Michelle, and
thank you
listening to this edition of Ag Matters Radio.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Talk to you soon.
You've been listening to Ag Matters, covering positive agriculture stories from across Alaska, with your host, Amy Pettit, of the Alaska Farmland Trust. Ag Matters is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska.
For more information about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.